This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Good morning, H-Town. Time to go to work.
I almost interrupted Lovey there. I apologize, Lovey. I'd never disrespect you, Lovey Smith.
Don't do that.
Not until at least three games into the NFL season. Sean Pendergast is not here today. He's off watching his daughter, Judy, compete in cross country. You know what? Wade, we had a listener yesterday who wasn't aware that Sean's daughter, Judy, is one of the best cross country runners in college sports. And it's always a shock to people, which Sean does not take as an insult. He'll be the first to tell you. 100%. He does not look like he would spawn a cross-country runner.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you look at Sean Pendergast and you think to yourself, all right, his kid's intelligence, I would expect. You know, yeah. World-class, you know, cross-country runner, I would not expect. And so I'm sure he does not expect it, and he's just thankful that that's actually the case and that his daughter's, you know, graduating from Harvard. He's got a lot of things going for him in positive ways. All his kids are like, you know, I think the both of the boys have graduated from like TCU and Baylor and all these places. Like he did a good job, man. He's 3 for 3.
Yeah, his kids are all really bright, and like you know what, they're not just bright. They've got a spark about them, which is more important, really. Were your parents tall? I guess Sean probably, you know kids, people who are tall whose parents are short always get the hey, how tall was your milkman? Joke. Like, I feel like Sean might get that joke about his daughter a little bit. Like, how far could your mailman run 3 miles, or how quickly could he run 3 miles over the country road? Because you don't look like a cross country runner.
Yeah, man. Both of my parents are both 5'11". But I have like my grandma's 6 foot tall. My uncles are like 6'4", 6'5", 6'6". I got some tall uncles on my mom's side. So, but my dad is like the tallest one on his side of the family.
Yeah, so you do get that, like you stand out at...
Sometimes, you know, I kind of stand out, but I'm next to my dad.
Yeah, but that's, we were talking before the show about your daughters playing volleyball, and I've always been amazed, like when I go to volleyball tournaments, like how tall the dads are. Like you walk around.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I shouldn't be amazed. It makes sense, obviously.
No, no.
But it feels like you're walking into land of the giants. Like I feel like I'm 5'9", you know, which is, it's kind of a nice experience.
It's a humbling experience to walk through a volleyball convention center, because there's women that are taller than you. There's a bunch of dudes that are taller than you. In normal everyday life, if you're walking around 6'4", 6'5", you're usually towering over people, but they're 6'6", they're 6'9", they're 7'1".
Like, yeah.
Just on my 15-year-old daughter's team, my daughter is 6 foot tall. She's like the fifth or sixth tallest kid on the team, and all of their parents are all taller than me. Like there's dads that are 6'6", 6'7", 7'1". So, yeah, you feel pretty average when you're 6'4", 6'5", at volleyball convention centers.
Then you think about it, and that's just now, you know, travel volleyball has gotten so big in the last couple decades. Now all the children that have been perhaps created as all these people get together at big tournaments and everything have they're now coming of age. So I feel like those kids that were conceived back at the, you know, Northeast Regional Tournament in 2001 are going to be the super freak Yao Ming types.
Yeah,
you know, Yao Ming's parents were both, you know, professional basketball players in China.
Yeah, there's a lot of decision making that has to do with legacy and breeding, and less to do with just true love at these volleyball tournaments, because they're understanding, hey, if I do this right, You know what I mean? We can get some school paid for free. There's a lot of good things that can come from that.
You guys are doing like 23andMe. Not you personally, but you got like a 23andMe booth out in the corner and just try to...
I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but I wouldn't be surprised that it'll be coming up pretty soon.
Not a huge day in local sports news. Obviously, the Astros are just continuing to roll along. Christian Javier had a great night last night. The Astros end up winning that series 3-1 versus the Guardians. They're doing astoundingly well, really, since April 22nd. The biggest thing that hit the ticker yesterday was somewhat out of nowhere, although we've heard and seen a little bit more of Colin Kaepernick, but was Ian Rappaport reporting on the NFL Network this.
Fascinating development for Colin Kaepernick, who, as you mentioned, has not played in the NFL since 2016, has not had a meeting with the team since 2017 when he went to visit the Seattle Seahawks, who eventually decided not to sign him, despite Pete Carroll saying that he believed Colin Kaepernick should be in the NFL. And there have been several people over the last couple of years who have advocated for Colin Kaepernick getting a chance. One of those people is Las Vegas Raiders owner Mark Davis, who now does have the opportunity to sign him. So Josh McDaniels, the head coach of the Raiders, and Dave Ziegler, the general manager, worked out Colin Kaepernick earlier today.
So I saw this and I do this thing, Wade, every morning where I check to see what the top stories are on the Houston Chronicle, what the top stories are on The Athletic and elsewhere. And it's interesting because I think 5 years ago, this would have been huge news. That was the big topic.
Yeah.
It's so far, it hasn't hit any of those lists yet. I don't think it's. It hasn't become like a crossover news sensation quite yet. And maybe it won't. Which leads me to believe that maybe now he actually does have a realistic chance of signing somewhere, just because there's owners that have been semi open to it, or at least they claim to be. And if there's not a huge backlash, he might just get a tryout somewhere.
Yeah, I think he has a legitimate chance of catching on with the Raiders. You look at kind of Al Davis's history with the Raiders of picking up guys that, you know, might otherwise be looked at as frowned upon, or, you know, guys that are the black sheep, or the guys that, you know, other organizations might not want to take a look at. And his son, Mark, is kind of trying to carry on that same tradition and legacy with the Raiders. Kaepernick, apparently, for what I've seen, he's still been working out this entire time. He's been throwing with receivers. You know, he posts stuff on his social media, talks about how he works out. I don't know how many times a week, but it seems like he says something to the effect of like every day, or maybe it's every, you know, Monday through Friday, he's working out and throwing and stuff like that, and he's in great shape. So, and I think I saw something, maybe it was a year ago, where he was working out with some of the current guys in the league and throwing with them. And the video, he looked like the same guy. And it wasn't like, you know, he had a pretty, you know, throwing motion back in the day, but it was effective. In a lot of respects, it was effective. So I wouldn't be surprised if he catches on with the Raiders. I would just love to see what it would be like at a preseason game, because we haven't seen him play in a game in 5-6 years.
Yeah.
I would like to see what it's like at a preseason game, to see what type of reception he would get. I'm sure there'd be a lot of cheers, there'd be a lot of boos. I mean, he's still a polarizing figure in this country. And so it'd just be interesting to see how he would be able to perform if he gets back on the stage. Just get in a preseason game to see what you can get out of Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, that's a side of it. Just from a purely football perspective, I'm really curious about that side of it, because he's a guy that relied on his running ability and his athletic prowess to really set up the pass. Like he was one of those, that first wave of guys, you know, that could throw a deep ball, but set the deep ball up by being a running threat. And I think that with him being fresh, but also 34 years old, that would be really fascinating. The one thing that hit me just as you were talking, Wade, is that he actually he ushered in an era that is largely already gone, like, and departed. And I'm not talking about the zone read or anything. That's still around. People just don't talk about it as much. But the pistol, the actual pit, like, that was a Nevada Colin Kaepernick thing.
Yeah.
And they were the first one to run the pistol formation in the NFL. And now you see it here and there sprinkled in, but largely the pistol really isn't that big a deal anymore.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we started running that pistol stuff, I think it might have been in 2012, 2013 here in Houston. And that was right around the time that Kaepernick was taking the 49ers to the Super Bowl. And so you think it to yourself, like, when we did it here in Houston, it felt awkward. Like, the timing of it with the – when you're running outside zone, the timing of it, the handoff. And
if
they try to make it seem – like, make it be the same as far as the track that the running back took. But the timing of it just never felt the same. And the reactions by the defense never felt the same. And I'm sure that's probably why – they went ahead and, for the most part, have done away with the pistol. You don't see it very often anymore.
It was one of those things that, like, people, with a lot of the quarterback designed run game, a lot of people wanted to think that it was a novelty and people would adjust to it. That was partly too true, but a lot of it has stuck around, obviously, because it's just fundamentally sound. With the pistol, it was more gimmicky. I mean, because it doesn't, the running back has to commit to which side he's running before he might really want to.
Right.
If he's in pass protection, he can't really see exactly what the threats are. There's a whole lot that makes it. It makes it easier as a defense. You can figure out earlier in the play where the play is going.
Yeah, and you can feel that as an offensive lineman when you're blocking, you know, a three technique, or you see it by the reactions of the linebackers. It's like they were on it, and they were aware, and they were able to react so much quicker than what it was normal if it were under center. I think that just, especially when there wasn't just a bunch of Colin Kaepernicks running around the league at that time. As far as being that athletic and being able to do some of the things he could do, you could see why it kind of is phased out of some of the offense. Now, somebody will come up with something that's similar to that. I'm sure, like, Shanahan or somebody will, you know, McVay or somebody will come up with something over the next couple of years that might be some type of derivative of that. But you can understand why. I could understand firsthand why that kind of phased itself out.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear from your perspective. Look, I long ago made a vow to never, ever, ever get angry about power rankings. I'm about to break that vow for the 87th or 88th time. That's coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, Sean Pendergast is out for a few days. He's off watching his daughter, Judy, compete in cross country. She's very, very good. Google Judy Pendergast. You'll be impressed. You'll be blown away. In for him is former Texans Pro Bowl offensive lineman. He was never my teammate, which I got to talk to you about a little bit later, Wade. I got some flack about the Letterman jackets not too long ago from a supposed super fan who just assumed that I must have been on the team then.
It's all your fault, then. Seth Payne.
Yeah.
No, it's our fault.
This guy advertised himself as a super fan, then he tried to dig me, get at me by bringing up the Letterman jackets.
You know, all you former Texans look alike, bro.
Yeah, yeah. So I promised I did. I honestly used to never get angry about power rankings because I always figure it's somebody's opinion or it's like statistically based, so it's not that big a deal. And now I find myself getting offended by the most pathetic of all reasons to get offended by power rankings, which is that I feel like the Texans shouldn't be 32nd. I feel like if you put them 31st or 30th or 29th, I'd be okay with that. I would understand it. But I cannot abide Peter King putting the Texans 32nd in his power rankings, two places below a team that they swept in the regular season, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Is this Is this something wrong with me that am I just a cuck because I'm pathetic and weak and I want to fight and scramble for 30th or 29th? Personally, in my heart of hearts, I feel like they're going to end up even a marginal amount higher than that. But 32nd, after not finishing 32nd in the league in the actual games of football, it's bothering me, Wade.
And you know what? I'm not going to call you that term that you called yourself, but I understand why you would, you know, be kind of take offense to the fact that the Texans are being ranked dead last. You look at some of the changes that they've made over the past year. It's not the same Texans. It's not the David Culley Texans. It's not the Bill O'Brien Texans where he's trading everybody away. They've done a good job of acquiring talent over the past year or so. And that starts with Nick Caserio. I think things are running smoother. I think with Lovie Smith as a head coach, that's going to pay dividends as far as you not being one of the worst teams in the league. I think Lovie Smith brings a cachet to the organization that allows for and causes, you know, veterans to want to come here and rookies to buy in because he has that legitimacy to him that really the Texans didn't have last season. So I get that, but at the same time, you know, there's no Trevor Lawrence on this roster. There's no, I mean, it is a direct, I think a direct affront to like Davis Mills. It's a direct affront to the fact that the Texans haven't been able to run the football consistently in, I don't know, 8 years or so. I guess about 2014, it might have been the last time that they ran the ball, maybe 15.
When they did run it consistently, it was like they ran it a lot. And they would be 10th in the league in rushing, but like 25th in yards per carry.
Right, yeah. It wasn't even necessarily effectively, but they did it consistently back then. Now it's just been really, really bad. And so, you know, a lot of times the national media takes a little bit longer to figure out how bad things are and how good things are with various organizations. Like, I don't think people realize how bad things were in Houston while we at real time was figuring out like we're realizing it and understanding how bad things had gotten. And now since the tide is starting to turn the opposite direction, I think it's going to take them a little bit of time to figure that out as well. And so, you know, let them put the Texans 32nd and that's fine because, you know, the guys get to go out there and play the games. Let's not take offense to the list like that.
You know what's, I guess, in a way, kind of a circuitous compliment would be that I think one of the excuses that people are making for Trevor Lawrence, and it's a fair one, is that it was just an absolute mess under Urban Meyer. Even though they did have an actual NFL offensive coordinator at the helm of the offense, it was otherwise a mess in a lot of ways. Whereas with Davis Mills, and even though Tim Kelly isn't currently employed as an offensive coordinator in the NFL, certainly, I feel like they're kind of giving credit to Pep Hamilton without realizing that Pep Hamilton wasn't actually the offensive coordinator. So there's some weird thing going on where they're making excuses for Trevor Lawrence based on the fact that somehow the Jaguars were a worse situation than the Texans. And yet the Jaguars, because they hired a retread Doug Peterson, are now somehow in a better situation than the retread we hired. And with a quarterback who did better in a lot of respects, especially down the stretch. And I think the thing that people are forgetting and don't realize, because why would they watch Texans games last year, was just the difference in quality of opponent in the first go around with Davis Mills versus the second go around. You know, that first set of starts, he faced the Panthers, the Bills, the Patriots, the Colts, the Cardinals, the Rams. Like, those were the defenses he faced in his first six starts in the NFL.
Yeah, and he had a tough go of it his first go around. He looked like a rookie. And then once he came back later on in the year, he started to right the ship a little bit. He played a little bit better. He was more consistent. And so that's the kind of what Texans fans are holding on to and hoping that he can kind of progress from that step that he took last season going forward. But the national media they're not going to believe. And that's fine. That's fine. And that's great. Because, you know, I would much rather prove someone wrong than, you know, especially in a situation like that, than to be crowned and then let everybody down. And so, you know, Davis Mills has an uphill battle. You look at the situation and what the Jaguars had last year, like, it arguably was worse there in Jacksonville than it was here in Houston. Like, when you look at the fact that the head coach doesn't come back with the team, he's out there gallivanting in bars with co-eds and
being ground upon
and kicking kickers, you know. Yes. And I heard an interview with AJ Cann was on with In the Loop. I think it was yesterday. Maybe it was yesterday or the day before yesterday, but I think it was yesterday. And they asked him about it, and you could tell that he was very thankful that he was on the IR last year and he was only around there for like 4 or 5 weeks. So he had his out to where he didn't have to like truly let it be known how bad it was in Jacksonville and how terrible of a situation and culture yeah. they had created down there. You could just hear in his response. He was like, yeah, you know, I got hurt week four. So I, you know, I just came in, did my rehab and was out of there. So I didn't really see it, but I saw it. I mean, it was bad. It was bad there. Yeah. So, I can understand the case they're making of Doug Peterson being an offensive minded head coach. And you match him with a quarterback that is widely heralded as the next Andrew Luck, as far as how what caliber of quarterback he is coming in out of the draft. So I would expect them to put Jacksonville ahead of us at the national scale. But when you look at it here, like as a Houston Texans player and as somebody that has followed and covered the team since I've done playing, like Jacksonville, you always looked at that's a dub. Like, we're going to beat Jacksonville. That's one of the teams that we always beat. We consistently beat. And the numbers might not bear that out, but that's how you felt playing against Jacksonville. So I think that's part of the reason why it's hard for us to put Jacksonville ahead of the Houston Texans, even though they've made a bunch of moves and they brought in a bunch of guys. And the coaching staff, is, especially on the offense side of the ball, I think is going to be more effective going forward. So, you know, let them eat the cake. That's how I look at it.
I'm genuinely angry about the Texans power rankings. I'm starting to keep an eye on getting angry about some of the MLB Astros power rankings. They've been phenomenal in the past month. They've got some eye-popping stats to prove it. But MLB power rankings, be warned. I'm coming after you next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
So, Christian Javier was very, very good last night. The Astros have been pretty damn good since April 22nd. The team put out some stats yesterday that all meet the eyeball test. Brandon Scott tweeted these out, and Brandon's usually very, very accurate, especially like if he's writing an article. He forgot to include that these stats are since April 22nd. So I think he's beating himself up all night over that. Because the eye-popping one is a lot of people are always just hoping that Jose Altuve has fallen off a cliff outside of Houston, since so many people are ignorant and stupid and think that he was the ringleader or something in the being better than everybody else scandal. But Jose Altuve is, since April 22nd, fourth in OPS at 1131. He's third in the AL in slugging, and he's sixth in batting average. He's been every bit of his old self in a lot of ways for the past month, as have a lot of guys on this team.
Yeah, man, the Astros are getting some consistency out of Altuve, where earlier in the year he was struggling, just trying to kind of figure things out. And that's something that you look and expect out of Jose Altuve. He's been a damn good high-level player for a very long time now. And like you said, a lot of people are hoping for him to fall off. But when you're good, you're good. And a lot of his career, he's been great. He's still good right now. And they've been getting such great starting pitching. And then Presley's been doing a great job closing ball games. Like, you know, the Astros, you look at what happened last night. The bats weren't popping like that, but you get a performance out of Christian Javier. He gives you, you know, 9 strikeouts and 5 2/3 innings. No runs given up. Like, that's the type of performance you get out of your starting pitcher, and you win a game 2-1. And then, you know, the night before, you got a good pitching out of Framber, and, you know, a guy that at his last few starts, he's been consistently playing well. And then tomorrow, you got Verlander coming to the bump, who's arguably the best pitcher in baseball still to this day. So it starts with starting pitching. They're getting that when they're not, you know, a lot of times they'll have those big breakout performances, or not necessarily breakout performances, but they'll have those performances at the plate where it shows kind of that murderer's row lineup that they have that they can put out there at you. But even on games where the bats aren't working, the pitching is working so well that they're still getting W's. And that's especially when you're in a close, you know, race with the Angels in the West. It was good that they were able to get that win last night, and then that team up 45, the Rangers got a win over the Angels, and so that helped kind of give them a little bit of cushion in the West a little bit.
It's a more well-rounded team in some respects than other really good Astros teams have been, and I think one of the notable things too is just in the strikeouts. When, like, back in 2019, between Verlander and Gerrit Cole, it was just absurd how many double-digit strikeout games there were between them and actually the whole staff. Whereas, like, this year, they're about midway through the pack. They're 14th in the league in strikeouts. But the part I told you before that I was starting to get a little bit aggravated. I'm not yet, because the Astros got off to such a slow start. I'm starting to get a little bit aggravated that everybody so resolutely has the Yankees ahead of the Astros. And I'm keeping an eye on that, just because if you look at like FanGraphs and some of the places that do playoff probabilities, World Series probabilities, the Astros are actually most favored in the AL to win the World Series.
Right.
So, that's sometimes an indication of other things, but because of playoff seeding and whatnot. But I'm keeping an eye on that, Wade. I'm going to get mad about two things. I get mad about slight little fluctuations at the very top of power rankings,
uh-huh,
and slight little fluctuations at the very bottom of power rankings.
There's not many baseball teams that can get me angry, but the Yankees are one of them. And they've been that way for me since probably like 1994, 1993, long, long time ago. Really couldn't stand the Yankees, and they still hold that place near and dear in my heart that I really can't stand them. And so when people crown them, that's fine. Go ahead and crown them. All I know is when they play the Astros in the postseason, they fall up short. They come up short. It seems like every time that matchup, it's like how I look at the Jaguars. Like, I expect to beat them, and
yeah,
I expect the Astros to beat the Yankees. And the way that the Yankees fans react to getting beat by the Astros – And you, what's the actor out there that's always cussing and stuff? And is what is his name? It's not Benicio.
The Yankees fan.
The Yankees fan is always cussing out the Astros and mad.
Turturro's brother there. It's the lesser Turturro.
Yeah, that
Nick
guy.
Nick Turturro.
Yeah, that guy. Every time the Yankees get beat, I just sit back and watch his videos and him crying and bitch and moan about, you know, what the Yankees did or didn't do. And I'm looking forward to that again, even though they'll be ranked number 1, 2, 3 in the power rankings for the entire duration. When it matters the most, they fall short against the Astros.
I think Yankees fans might be getting a little sick of that dude. And I know that, you know, some Yankees fans are, this is what I'm worried about. They've kind of gotten wise to the fact that when they try to pick on Jose Altuve, he makes them eat their words, including Aaron Judge. That was what, you know, when Aaron Judge did his little fake pulling off the jersey, mm-hmm, that was when Jose Altuve hit the walk-off home run at the end last year of that series. So I think that they might start – now, who am I kidding? No, they're going to keep doing it. They'll keep baiting Jose Altuve, and Jose Altuve will continue to dominate them. The thing that I guess I get most impressed with Dusty Baker, and it's not like the managerial moves in any specific game, because he makes a lot of curious lineup changes. But I think when you look at why he was hired and what he does now that's kind of counter to the narrative that used to be out there about Dusty Baker, is that he's A, perfectly comfortable, you know, going along with James Click and whatever analytics that they're feeding him. But B, that, like, for a guy that could just go ahead and be the most old school of all guys and say, hey, back in my day, this isn't how we did it. And for a guy that used to have a reputation as grinding his pitchers into the dirt and overplaying guys and what have you, he's getting criticism this year for resting guys too much.
Right.
I saw a little bit of it yesterday. Like, okay, so Jeremy Pena is a rookie. He's having a great year. And it raises eyebrows when Jeremy Pena, a rookie who should be fresh as the day is long, gets a night off. When, you know, he's been in 38 games in the last 7 weeks. As Adam Spolane pointed out, that's more than he's played at any point in any season since 2019. I feel like a lot of old school managers would have said, no, the rookie will stay out there. He's fine. His legs feel fresh. Dusty Baker never shows one hint of you know, being like grudgingly resting these guys or giving guys day off to the point where people actually use it as a form of criticism against them.
Yeah, I look at it like this. Dusty Baker is a guy that has kind of transformed the way he does things as far as managing players, managing their rest. That was one of his biggest knocks in the past, is that, you know, he was running pitchers into the ground because he wouldn't take guys out of ball games. That was the type of way that he did things. He's become more open-minded, and he's ready to listen to, you know, the analytics and that approach. But at the same time, if he gets a feeling, if his intuition tells him to go against the numbers, he's willing to do that. And a lot of times he gets criticism for that because, you know, he keeps Maldonado in there, you know, in the eighth inning a couple days ago, where he gets the hit to basically win the game against the Rangers, and everybody's like, oh, you shouldn't have kept him in there because it's Maldonado, he can't hit, and he comes through and makes the play, and people will criticize him, but it's like they criticize him, but for some reason, something that he's picking up in the actual dugout, you know, in the actual clubhouse, actually feeling the situation, being right there on ground level, is working out for him. And so I have to defer to that because he's been doing this for such a long time. He's had so much success.
Yeah,
he's going to be a Hall of Fame coach eventually. Like, let him for the most part, the 90% of the time, ride with the numbers. But when he has his feelings, he has his gut feelings, I'm going to ride with that too, because it seemed like it tends to work out.
There's some things too, and I don't even know what he was asked about when he gave this answer last night, but immediately I thought of Jose Siri, because Dusty loves him some Jose Siri. Batting statistics be damned. And it is, it's like, it's more nuanced than just, you know, I expect him to start hitting or something. This is what he said about how much he loves speed.
I've always liked speed. You know, speed kills. And speed makes you rush and makes you do things. It makes the pitcher hang stuff to the next hitter. That's up more worried about, you know, when the pitcher's not worried about that you're going to run. I mean, the pitcher can just take all the time that he wants and execute the way he wants to execute. And so, you know, like I said, I'll take a whole team full of speed and some guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark.
So Siri last night had a double that he terrifyingly almost tried to turn into a triple, because there's nothing more terrifying than when Jose Siri rounds a base, and you can tell that, like, especially when he's rounding third base, and you can tell that Pettis hasn't, like, he's either giving him the stop sign or he's not waving him through, and you can't tell what's going on in the outfield, but you figure it's not good. Last night it worked out. He held it second. He ended up actually inducing Jose Altuve into a base running error because he's so fast that Miles Straw knew not to try to test his arm and try to throw Jose Siri out at home. And yet Altuve's grateful to have Siri on the team because it takes the spotlight away from Jose Altuve's base running errors. He ended up getting thrown out at second. But
I mean, the Astros, historically, their base running, if there's one thing that's always been bad with the Astros since they've been damn good, is base running. So, I mean, Jose Siri just kind of fits right into that whole, it's a narrative, but it's not a narrative. It's actually, well, like, it's bad base running.
There's two things about that, where I'll give you the devil's advocate. Because, yeah, sometimes it's just boneheaded, and you wonder, like, why is he standing between the base paths when it's obvious that ball's going to get caught? What is he doing? There are those times, but there's two things where it's not as bad as I think sometimes it looks. Is one, is that they have just classically, ever since Luno came in, like, their whole philosophy is they're going to be aggressive as hell. They'd rather make a mistake. They'd rather force a throw at home. They want to make outfielders make the perfect throw. So there's that. And then the other is just because they've been such a good offense, they have more outs on the bases because they have so many more base runners. So there's more opportunities. You know, if you're the worst offense in the league, you don't have that many opportunities to make stupid plays. So I cut them a break partially. There are sometimes, especially now that Altuve's like in his mid-30s, there's times where you just wonder what he's thinking.
I don't cut him much of a break just because, yeah. I just don't. But I just take the good with the bad because there's so much good. There's got to be something that – there's got to be – every team has a weakness. To me, their base running has been their weakness. Since the Astros have been good, their base running has been bad.
Let me ask you this. What was it like playing with Jacoby Jones – Because Jacoby Jones is who I think of sometimes when I watch Jose Siri. I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy's so freakishly talented, and yet he terrifies me. Like somebody just gave me a drug at a party or something, and I don't know them or the drug. I don't know what I'm about to get. It might be good. It might be awful.
So Jacoby was
kids,
like...
Kids, I never do that, by the way. Yeah, that was a metaphor. That
sure, sure. But yeah, Jacoby, man, he brought energy. He brought excitement. He was a fun teammate to play with. You know, one minute he's going to make a play that you know, he's going to make a huge return, and then the next minute he might fumble a punt in the playoff game. And so, he had his ups and he had his downs as a Texans player, but you loved him because you knew that he was going to give his all, and he wanted to win so bad. And he brought that personality, brought that, you know, he was dancing after touchdowns and all that type of stuff. As Bill O'Brien would say, he brought juice every day. He brought the juice. And there was times where, you know, Andre Johnson was out with injuries and Jacoby would step up and make plays when he got his opportunity to be the one or two guy. And he was just an explosive player. He's one of my favorite teammates that I was able to play with. He like I said, he brought that energy. He brought that juice.
Did he change at all when he went to Baltimore? Like, did he mature because of the change of scenery?
When he went to Baltimore, he was on 10. Like he had to kind of hold back a little bit here in Houston because some of the things that he might want to do might be frowned upon out there. They let his freak flag fly. Like, they let him do whatever he wanted to do. And so he was Jacoby on 10 out there. And I think he loved it out there because of that he didn't have to hold anything back. And like, we look at him and say, like, Jacoby was off the wall. He was doing all this type of stuff. But, you know, at times he was holding back some of the stuff he really wanted to do and how he wanted, you know, how free he was as a person and as a player. So he went out to the Baltimore and he helped them win a Super Bowl. And I was happy for him.
I wonder, I was thinking about Dusty not being stubbornly old school, and I think that's why he's been able to stay so youthful. So I was trying to examine myself for the things that I'm still stubbornly old school about. And I think the only two things really are that I probably should be a little bit ashamed of is I miss when there was more fighting in training camp between players, and I miss rookie hazing to an acceptable degree.
Okay, now, I don't think you should feel shame about that at all. Like, first of all, fighting in training camp, it's usually like a handful of people are fighting, and it positively affects everyone else because a lot of times coaches get frustrated and call up the damn practice. And when you're in the – and now, you know, these days, the two-a-days and three-a-days that we kind of experienced in our time, they don't have the same stuff going on. So, you know, missing practice and like, hey, we need to figure something out to get off this field because we're about to pass out here. You don't have that type of issue anymore.
That.
But guys would legitimately like start fights because it's like, yo, somebody's going to pass out. So, go over there and start something so we can get off this field. So I don't think you should miss that. And then the other part, what was the other thing that you said that you...
Just rookie hazing.
Yeah, rookie hazing. Like,
I like to call it responsibilities, rookie responsibilities.
I think they still have responsibilities. It's definitely not on the same level of what we did, you know, the haircuts and all that type of stuff that was going on back in the day. You know, as long as you're not, you know, putting out code reds against people, I think hazing has a place in the NFL locker room because it's not the type of hazing that would go on like in the military or something that would go on in a fraternity. It's not that type of hazing. It's just like, hey, let's keep these youngsters. I think these days, if you look at the Texans, like the hazing goes on by like Nick Caserio and the way they do things there where guys are not allowed to talk and they humble the guys with, hey, don't compare them to these older players. They humble them on social media. They humble them that way. That's the kind of hazing that they go through here in Houston, but it's definitely not the same. I don't think you should miss that at all. Don't feel bad about that. Or maybe that's just me being an old school guy too and saying and co-signing everything that you're going.
Bill Walsh used to ban hazing rookies, and I remember I talked to Charles Haley about that once, and he's like, "Oh no, we just didn't do it where Bill Walsh could see it." And I think there's always a distinction between, I guess, like initiation or rites of initiation and actual hazing. I always think of hazing as being kind of like humiliating and abusive, whereas the other stuff, it's like, okay, you got to know your role and know your place. And it's harder to do because you don't get the same you don't get that same group of core veterans that sticks around forever that are part of a culture
yeah.
at a place anymore like they, like you used to. I think so. It's probably as much a function of that as anything else.
So if I put together a list of like if making a rookie stand up on the table and sing their alma mater or sing the national anthem or sing something, is that considered hazing or is that just kind of a rites of passage type
thing? I think it's hazing, but it's not like abusive hazing. It's
right.
like it's a playful level of humiliation where it's not singling a guy out for some reason or anything. You know, it's just like they're making them you're making them sacrifice a little bit for the good of the group.
Seth,
entertain me, damn it,
Seth. You know what I miss though? I miss yeah. rookie shows. Rookie
do they
shows.
Not do them? Oh, you just oh you miss. Not
I just miss
them. Yeah.
I just miss not see, like being there for rookie shows. Rookie shows like. The rookie show when Jonathan Grimes and Case Keenum, I guess that was, might have been 2013. There were some talented-ass dudes. And then there was yeah. Supernaw, Philip Supernaw, those dudes. They put together like a whole concert. And I was like, where are all these talented individuals? I thought we were just football players. Like,
could Supernaw sing like as well as his uncle? Or I mean, like not as well as his uncle. It was his uncle, right?
It was somebody. I don't know if yeah. it was his dad or his uncle or somebody yeah. that was an actual like artist. But like Supernaw could sing. He could rap. He knew like him and Case Keenum knew all the old school Houston rap. Like those were talented dudes. Grimes could play instruments. And you had guys like Arian Foster that's like a, you know, a legitimate artists. Like rookie shows were pretty cool back in the day. That's one thing I missed about the locker room. I missed about training camp specifically.
It was Doug Supernaw was the singer. He was from, I think he was originally from Bryan, and I think he passed away too, but he was Philip Supernaw's uncle, maybe somebody, the text line will let me know. There's a strong theme of disrespect running through the show prep this morning. I realized this as we were sitting down during the break. Something got up my butt yesterday, and one of them was ESPN and possibly J.J. Watt disrespecting Houston. Not actually J.J. Watt. I can't do an irresponsible headline that way. But I did think for a minute that it was J.J. Watt. I will not have it, ESPN.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.